This recording of the sermon at University Lutheran on Easter Sunday is being separately recorded for listeners on our website. That means, as a listener, you have a role to play. Every time you hear, "Christ is risen," then it's your opportunity to join in with, "Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia." With the dawn of Easter, the season of Lent is ended. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia. Is it just me? Or did this Lenten season, for a whole host of reasons, feel extra long? Lent is always the same length, 40 days, not counting Sundays. Not counting Sundays because every Sunday, regardless of the season, is always a celebration of resurrection. Each week, a little Easter. Each week, an essential reminder that Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia. Still, some Lenten seasons feel longer than others. Looking back, one Lenten season that seemed particularly long began when I came home after leading a noontime service on Ash Wednesday. Came home to discover that my partner and our youngest son had spent the morning off in the countryside visiting a breeder, that is, visiting a breeder of dogs. And there they picked out a six-week-old puppy to add to our family. Surprise! From marking foreheads with black crosses and the words, "Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return," to holding a wriggling lapful of black Labrador Retriever puppy love. What I remember thinking at the time was, "Just take me now, Lord." Not that I don't like puppies. I love dogs. The loss of our beloved yellow lab mix the year before was crushing. So now, a furry bundle of adorable black Labrador Retriever love, yet to be housebroken love on Ash Wednesday. This, I thought to myself, is going to be a very long Lent. And it was. We named the puppy Marley, not after Jacob, but Bob. His predecessor was Tosh, after Peter. We were and remain big reggae fans because it is such excellent music to dance with. Well, fortunately for us, we still had the heavy wire crate that we'd used to train Tosh to not do his business in the house. We decided that the best spot to set the crate up now was a corner in the dining room. Throughout those 40 days of Lent plus Sundays, Marley spent every night in the crate, waking us up with urgent whimpers around 5 every morning because naturally he had to go. Then there were those times during the day when we couldn't keep an eye on him for signs of needing to go out, so into the crate he went. Lastly, after having accidents in the house, we'd put him in the crate for a time out. These particular times of crate exile were sometimes preceded by loud sniffing of a human nose, as in, "What's that I smell?" And always accompanied by the groaning of his name, "Marley." It was a very long Lent, but Easter dawned. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia. And not only was Jesus freed from the tomb, the Lent-long discipline of crate training has done its job. So, Marley was free. The crate got dismantled and returned to the basement. free at last. Or so we thought. In a very real sense, Marley was not free from his cage. Yes, he was perfectly housebroken, but in his furry mind, the crate seemed to always be there in the corner of the dining room. Just because he'd been housebroken didn't mean he was a less flawed member of the family. In his case, there would be food snarfed from the counter, trash cans explored and upended, and homework, though never completely eaten, often liberally drooled upon. And so, whenever Marley heard his name uttered in frustration, Marley, uttered in that old judgmental tone, the tone of shame, he'd automatically head for the dining room, over to the corner. So strong was this trigger, he didn't even have to hear his name. Any demonstrative sniffing of the air by a human nose, what's that, would be taken as a signal that, once again, he'd been a bad dog. Head down, tail between his legs, off he'd go to the corner, to his cage. Now, I'm delivering this clearly in a somewhat confessional tone because I contributed to this cage that proved to be hard to dismantle. And so, quite honestly, defensively, I want to tell you that the pup of our children's childhood had a long and mostly happy life. Still, while the crate was gone, his cage of shame remained. For Marley, the effect of that first Easter was short-lived. And such an experience may not be limited to puppies. For human beings, memories of cages of one sort or another may remain vivid for a very long time after the actual physical bars are gone. Here at Uniloo, we have an Easter tradition that speaks a word of hope to all who struggle with such cages. The tradition is the banner behind me. At quick glance, one may only focus on Jesus descending the stairs, trailing the wrappings of his shroud, clearly alive. Gaze a little longer, and you won't find the women who came with spices to the tomb early on Easter morning. Nor are there any of those first male disciples who encounter the risen Jesus. Instead, around Jesus, there's this crowd, and with only one exception, all are shown in postures that communicate deep, even agonized longing, all with arms stretched out toward Jesus. The only one in the mix whose stance communicates confidence and calm is the one on the left of Jesus, a man wearing an animal skin tunic and holding a staff. While his head is turned away from Jesus to those standing beside him, his hand is pointing directly at Jesus. That figure is John the Baptist, who precedes Jesus in death by only a short time, death at the hands of King Herod, who had him beheaded. Where is this scene happening then, and when? Well, the title gives it away. This banner is entitled The Harrowing of Hell. The location is hell. And when? Well, the day before the first Easter rising, the Saturday before the first Easter Sunday, where, as we say in the Apostles' Creed, Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died, and was buried, and then he descended into hell. About this descent, the writer of our second reading this morning from 1 Peter says that Christ went and made a proclamation to the spirits in prison, that is, to the spirits in the ultimate cage, a descent for the purpose of proclaiming an end to cages once and for all, to announce the victory of dignity over shame unconditionally and once and for all, for the speaking of a word of love strong enough to dismantle any cage anywhere once and for all. On the third day, by way of hell, Christ rose from death to life for the proclamation of this promise, the promise that says, your cage is gone. Really, the cage is gone, I promise. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia. For the hearing of that promise, we come together again and again. And we gather in this dining room where bread is broken, wine is poured for the forgiveness of sin, and where there are no corners and there are no cages. The cage is gone, says Christ, I promise. And so we say to one another, Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia. The promise given by the risen Christ to us for our cages and for us for the freeing of others when we encounter a child of God for whom cages are still all too real. For the dismantling of those cages, we have powerful words to speak. We have the word with the power that God put to work when raising Jesus from the dead. Words to speak not only with our lips, but with our actions, doing justice that dismantles cages, being embodied kindness, walking humbly with Jesus, who by way of hell does rise. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia. Alleluia.